You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 19. It doesn't have to be 7 years apart. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including Seth MacFarlane, the Star Trek card-building game, William Shatner seeking Major Tom, Siri, Zachary Quinto prepping for the Star Trek sequel, and casting a new Star Trek engineer. And in the feature, we'll be joined by Larry Nemechek to discuss the swinging pendulum of Star Trek and the future of Star Trek on television. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you today?
I am good this evening. Yeah, I've been out and about all day, but I am back here in the Seattle studio, ready to talk some Trek with you.
Yeah, you know, I feel like we're kind of in the Star Trek future here. It feels like because we were having some problems, technical problems, getting the show going here, and now we're both sitting here with our iPhone 4S's doing FaceTime.
Yes,
and I'm in Japan and you're in Seattle and we're sitting here with these two phones chatting.
Basically identical phones.
It's really something.
We truly are in the post-PC era. So much so that I wish I could be recording this with my iPad. I don't know if I quite trust it to that level.
You know, it's funny. It is kind of like post-PC era in a way that we were just using our Macs, but our personal computers. And we had to cut the cord on it. And we had to switch over to these phones.
Yeah.
So we can see each other.
Well, we had to use the iPhones to troubleshoot the troubles we were having with our Macs. And then we just said, you know what? I'm just going to hit this button that turns us from talking to actual talking in real life.
And now
we have no more problems. So.
Yeah, it's true. We're having this problem with the computers and we're iMessaging each other on the phones. Go check this. Not only am I iMessaging you, but I'm actually using voice dictation to create the iMessages and sending them to you. Wow.
Which we'll talk about
later
like
in
Star
the show. It's like Star Trek is really here. But
computer.
Okay, well, why don't we jump into some actual Star Trek news?
Yes, indeed.
For today. And okay, first story. We have to talk about this one. As is so often the case, something comes out, someone says something, and the media headlines kind of distort it, okay?
Right.
So, in a recent interview with the Hollywood Reporter, Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane had said that he would like to see Star Trek revisited on TV, rebooted on TV. But the headlines, of course, read that Seth MacFarlane wants to reboot Star Trek on TV.
Exactly.
So, let's just suppose that CBS decided to give Seth MacFarlane the keys to the Star Trek franchise. What would you think about that?
Oh my goodness. Well, I don't know if you've seen the Family Guy Star Wars specials. The last one I think was...
I have seen one of them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There was something, something, something dark side, that sort of thing. And they are funny. You can tell that Seth is a nerd, or at least his writing staff is, and they have followed the various things that people have noticed about the Star Wars films over the years. And if he has that level of detail, knowledge of Star Trek, the only thing is I don't know about his actual dramatic, especially his sci-fi directing skills.
That's the thing.
I've seen him in serious roles on TV. He was on Gilmore Girls. He was on Flash Forward for a couple episodes.
There were only a couple of episodes of Flash Forward, right?
Right. I think he was supposed to be.
Did you talk about that? Oh, that was before we started the show.
This was before the show, but I was watching.
Did we time travel and you talked about Flash Forward?
Yes. Well, now I'm going to talk about Family Guy. And
everybody brace yourselves. Fans, brace yourselves.
People want Family Guy to be canceled. It's like The Simpsons. It's still a great show. It's still fantastic week to week, but people love to hate it. But anyway, Seth MacFarlane. I don't hate the guy. But I don't know if he needs to be given the keys to Star Trek.
Right. So that's the thing about Seth MacFarlane. If he were to be given the keys by CBS to the Star Trek franchise, that you know, I can see if he were doing a Star Trek special, some kind of animated special, and making jokes about Star Trek, I think it would be fantastic.
Right.
But if we're talking about rebooting Star Trek on television, first of all, although I think that it's most likely that the next series will be animated, I think what the fans really want to see is a live-action Star Trek series. Mm-hmm. And of course, fans are going to want to have that serious exploration of humanity that Star Trek has done for 45 years. And I just, there's no way I can see, personally, what I know about Seth MacFarlane, I cannot see that coming from him. So,
yeah, exactly. I like, he has the geek credentials, although he might not have the geek cred in the current current scheme of things. But I think he could do it, but I don't think he's the man for the job, certainly. And again, as we said at the beginning, I don't think he was asking for the job. It was kind of
right
misinterpreted, as tends to happen.
Yeah, to be clear, he said that he would like to see Star Trek rebooted on television. And he specifically said, what he specifically said was, I'd love to see that franchise revived for television in the way that it was in the 1990s. Very thoughtful, smartly written stories that transcend the science fiction audience. And then he said that, I don't know who would give me the keys to that car.
Exactly.
So that's the thing. Trek Movie ran a poll after this, though, called Seth Trek, and they asked readers, do you like the idea of MacFarlane bringing Star Trek back to the small screen? And the results were, good idea, 52%, not sure, maybe 30%, and bad idea, 18%.
Oh, interesting.
Where would you vote out of those three options?
Well, I mean, if it was between Seth MacFarlane creating a serious animated Star Trek TV series and there being no Star Trek on TV, I would happily give MacFarlane the job.
Okay.
So wherever that puts me on the poll.
I guess that would put you on not sure or maybe.
Yeah,
that,
probably.
The 30%.
Probably.
I would have to say bad idea myself. It's just not... I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe there's things... Maybe he would bring something to the table that we haven't seen before, and you know, I just don't know. But from what I do know... I would rather hold off a few more years until we got just the right person in there rather
yes.
than the studio, you know, just trying to put something out there. I think, like I said, I think the next series will be animated, and I think what we'll see is we'll see Bad Robot doing it.
Right.
Or we won't see anything, but if we do see one, I think it'll be Bad Robot doing it
yeah. and,
alongside the movies and possibly using it to The problem with the movies is that we're only going to get a little bit here and there every few years. And so the comics right now are kind of being used to fill in those gaps and try to move the Abramsverse forward. So they could very effectively do that with an animated TV series. So who knows?
Yeah, I'd love to see it. Like I said, it's mainly good just to see people like Seth MacFarlane be out there in the press saying, you know, let's get this done. You know, if nothing else,
yeah,
that'll encourage Orky and Kurtzman and Abrams to actually... Make it happen. Have those meetings that they can have if they feel like going in that direction.
And maybe not so much Kurtzman and Orky, because I think they would like to do it, but the studio, like the
right,
studio can
right.
see that, oh, there are these other people who are saying that we want to see Star Trek back on television too, and maybe it gives some impetus to those executives at the studio
yeah.
to make that happen, like you said. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to talk about that a little bit because it was an interesting story, and
yeah.
who knows where it'll go. So,
yeah, pretty big
moving on, there was an unboxing video posted by Bandai on YouTube a few days ago unboxing the Star Trek deck building game, and then
yeah,
I got
didn't
an
actually...
iMessage from you earlier
yeah.
with the photo of you playing this game. So
yeah, I didn't even know about the unboxing video, but I did a little bit of unboxing myself this afternoon. Walked into the local game store that I've been meaning to go to. If you're in Seattle, head to Gamma Ray Games. It's, it's on Pike and Bellevue, if you're near there.
Oh,
I believe that's
how appropriate. I thought you were going to say it was on the corner of Pike and Kirk.
Pike and Kirk, you know, right there on the Menagerie. No, Pike and Bellevue, I believe, is the corner. Anyway, find
the
Gamma
Bellevue
Ray Games.
Menagerie.
It's a great little shop, And of course,
I like to buy my clothes there. I get my hats at Tolosian's. It's a really nice shop they have there on the Menagerie. Over there in Bellevue.
The problem with their hat shot is you can never tell if the hats are for men or women or...
Yeah. You need to get the adjustable ones, too, because the pre-fitted ones, they're always too big for me. So,
indeed.
Anyway, tell us about this card
game. As I was saying, my eyes were drawn. I was sort of just walking in there to find any game, but I was drawn to this box that said Star Trek Deck Building Game. And it also says the Next Generation Premiere Edition. And there's some actually like great artwork just on the box. It looks like somebody used Adobe Illustrator in the way our artist does for Trek FM to make a Enterprise D that looks very nice on the cover. And then some great publicity shots from back in the day. Q, Sela, you know, Picard, Riker, and all that. So it drew me in. And then I talked to the guy there, and he said it was a lot like Dominion, which is a game I've played. And the idea, it's a deck-building game. Which brings to mind for me something like Magic or Pokemon, where you just have to keep buying more and more cards and build your deck. That's not the idea at all. The idea is you build your deck as the game goes on. So each person gets a deck from the cards that are like sort of communal cards. And then when you're all done, they get recycled back into the deck. It's sort of like an RPG. And that you start kind of weak, and you you build up your power, you build up your deck as the game goes on.
Okay. So, well, sounds interesting. Now, this is original series, Next Generation,
right?
Enterprise. Is there a Porthos card in here?
They are starting with Next Gen. This is the premiere edition, and I'll be interested to see what they do in upcoming expansions. I'm assuming there are expansions coming. If they will just release a DS9 edition, or if they will just sort of do add-on cards. One interesting thing...
Keeping it within the Next Generation, possibly.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see. One cool thing about this is that it includes... Well, it includes the main game, which is called Exploration, which is a lot like just a typical Star Trek episode where you have your starship and you happen upon like an alien planet or a starship or something, and you have to do diplomacy or have a big battle, lots of stuff like that. But then there are two other game modes. One's co-op, like versus the game, where you're trying to defeat the Borg. So there's like special Borg cards that you insert into the rest of the deck to make that happen. And then there's another one where you're doing a Klingon Civil War. So yes, two players are one side of the war and two players are the other side of the war, and they have to battle each other. So there's a lot of diversity in what you're able to do with the game just out of the box before they've even released any expansions.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
So are there any special cards? Like, is there a barrel roll card? is there a Pulaski card that you can use launch a nag attack on your enemy? Or
we did draw the LeVar Burton card. The Geordi LaForge card, of course. And I made the barrel roll joke, and no one understood it.
I think it's just us. It's just you and me. I'm sure everyone listening to this, too, is like, man, they're always talking about barrel rolls. They play that barrel roll song all the time.
That wasn't his power. It is cool that there are... So you have basic character cards. You have sort of ensigns, lieutenants, and commanders that sort of don't have any faces. But then there are character cards. Everything from Wesley. Wesley. Everyone has a quote, and Wesley's is, "We're from Starfleet. We don't lie."
Oh yeah,
which has to be my favorite Wesley quote. So everything up to Riker, Picard's in there. I have yet to see Pulaski.
Quote would be data, what's the difference?
What's the difference? Most of the artwork seems to be from season 4 onward. Although there is a Tasha Yar card that obviously is from season 1. But it seems to be mostly focused on those later years.
When the series was very set visually.
Right. The lens flare from the child, there is not a card for that, thankfully.
Oh, that's not in there. That's too bad. And there's none for the Royale. You'd think there would be Royale cards.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if they do a Royale expansion. We should start a write-in campaign, I think.
That would be cool. And it comes bundled with a cowboy hat and a cigar.
And a door you cannot
leave. And a cheesy
leave.
Romance novel. All right. Well, this sounds like a fun game.
Oh,
unfortunately,
it is.
I won't get to play it because I have no one around here who can play a Star Trek deck building game with me. But it sounds like you'll have fun playing it there.
Yeah, it's two to five players. So as long as you have one nerd in your vicinity, that's enough. I played it with three people and then four people today. It actually takes a long time to play.
I was going to ask you that because that Bandai says that an average game takes around 45 minutes. Is that actually the case? It would take a lot longer than that.
What the box actually says is 60 to 90. And that's more... I mean, the first game I played went really fast because one player just kept leveling up and just won it. Mm-hmm. And it was maybe an hour. So that's a fast game. It was about an hour.
Fast game is an hour.
And the second game we abandoned about an hour and a half in because everybody just kind of had to leave. So there's definitely a lot of times when you have to sit and make a decision.
Drink coffee.
Like
drink whiskey.
Right. Drink some whiskey. Figure out how you want to play your XP. So it doesn't move as fast as like Dominion. I don't know if you've ever played, but I'm sure some of our listeners have. It can move really fast once you know what you're doing. This is a game that is a little bit harder to move fast because there's so many decisions that can't be made until it's already your turn and you do some things. So it's hard to plan out in advance what your strategy is going to be because you just don't know what cards are going to come up. And then suddenly you draw a card that makes everybody do a battle and suddenly things are exploding. It's kind of a crazy game, and I'm not sure what the strategy is yet, but it was loads of fun. I can't wait to try it with two players, see how that works out, and even up to five would be nice to try. So I still haven't tried Expeditions. That was the one I went into the store looking for.
Yeah, that's right.
But my understanding is that is more of a casual game or more of a family game, whereas... Mm-hmm. This is more of the nerd-based game. I didn't see on it any credits to Mike and Denise Okuda, which they really should have talked to them. But it seems pretty spot on. It's some people who obviously know a lot about the game or a lot about the show, and they really wanted to make a game that felt like the show, and that I really feel it does.
I think it's saying something that you just took two Star Trek games and you classified this one as more like a nerd game. So, all right. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes to the unboxing video of this anyway. And we have a little bit of information about this on the site, but I think it's maybe not quite accurate to the final release based on what you've been telling us here. But we'll put links anyway. And people can check it out.
So. Yeah. Definitely.
You know, I've been doing something kind of nerdy myself this past week, and that is that I've been listening over and over and over to William Shatner's Seeking Major Tom.
Oh, yes. I knew of this.
It's an interesting little album here.
Is it?
It's fine. I didn't know what to expect going in. I've talked to you about it, and I think we've talked about it on the show before about how good Has Been is.
Yes, really, really good.
Yeah, have you listened to Has Been?
I've listened to Has Been many times.
Many times.
Recently, but when it first came out, I just listened to it over and over again.
Over and over. Yeah, that's how I am, and I still listen to that. For those of you who don't know, Has Been was released in 2004. It's an album that was produced by Ben Folds, and it's a William Shatner. Of course, he's not singing. It's spoken word, more narration. It's, I think, all original content except for the first track, "Common People," which is a cover. But that album, the lyrics and the music and all, he has famous people playing with him on there, like Brad Paisley and Joe Jackson's on there. Of course, Ben Folds. But that music on Has Been is really coming from Shatner's life and from his heart, and it's a very, very interesting album and very well produced, great music. And I, when this one was coming out, and I found out what it first, I was excited because I was like, "Oh, we're going to get another album like Has Been." And then I found out what it was, and I was kind of like, "I don't know what I think about this." So what was your first reaction when you heard that this was going to be? An album full of covers and a lot of heavy metal music. It's not all heavy metal, but there's some in there.
Right. Well, I guess I was first introduced to it by that that intro video Shatner did a few months back, where he sort of explained the concept. And I guess it's kind of like he's putting together a mixtape of some of his favorite songs, and trying to make a story out of them, and at the same time trying to put himself into it. So conceptually, I get it. I have not listened to it, and I don't know if I'm going to, because it's similar to that Legion of Superheroes Star Trek crossover, in that I just don't know what to make of it, to the point where I just don't want to. But you've been listening to it, so you can actually have some insights as to how it actually came out.
I've listened to the whole thing straight through about 10 times now, probably. And I think it depends on what you expect going in. First of all, you have to like Shatner. If you don't like Shatner,
you're
probably not going to like this album. It's because it is very Shatner. And I've been reading the Shatnerverse. I think it's called the Shatnerverse, the Rules for Being Shatner, his new book that's out. And he says early in that book, he says that, you know, it's hard keeping up the Shatner, you know, that even Shatner can't keep up the Shatner all the time. So, and I think it's an important thing to remember about William Shatner is that the William Shatner that we know, the Shat, is a character.
Yes.
And he is playing, William Shatner is playing that character of William Shatner, if this makes any sense to you, what I'm trying to say here.
And, well, no, that's what was so great about Bleep My Dad Says, was because it was Shatner playing Shatner playing this role. Like, it was it was meta, to use a terrible term, but it was very much meta comedy. And I think if you didn't know the level of comedy, you just thought it was a dumb show with an angry guy. But when you understand it, there's this whole other level to it.
Yeah. Well, this album is very much that Shatner character. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's not so much a random selection of songs, though. There are a couple of kind of odd ones thrown in there, like Bohemian Rhapsody, that just, I can understand why they put it in there, because, well, he's got to do Bohemian Rhapsody.
Right.
But most of the songs have to do with space in some way. And the first track is Major Tom Coming Home, and he has Nick Valencia of the Strokes on there with him, and I wasn't, again, quite sure what to think about this one going in, but I actually really like the opening track. Major Tom is very good, and what they do is they kind of intersperse lines from Major Tom throughout the album. It's kind of the thread that runs through the album that pulls everything else together, and it leads you through. There are 18 tracks, and it finally brings you back home with a very unique cover of Duran Duran's Planet Earth with Steve Howe from Yes and Asia, which my wife came in and it was playing. My wife back in the day was you know, a big Duran Duran fan. And hearing this this version, and Shatner's there just going, da, 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 da. What is that? Like, that's terrible, you know, but it again, it's either good or bad depending on if you like Shatner and what you're expecting going in.
Right.
I'll just point, there's a couple of really good tracks on here. Rocket Man, which he's very famous for from back in the day, is actually quite good. It's a little overdramatic, but you know, that's the Shat. But it's good, and I keep listening to that one over and over. There's a great cover of She Blinded Me with Science on here with Bootsy Collins and Patrick Mraz, who are from Yes and the Moody Blues. And it's great. I actually listened to that one over and over. Definitely recommend that you listen to that one. And then, Brad, I don't know. I don't know if you're a country music fan, Greg, but do you know who Brad Paisley is?
I do. Anyway? I am an American. So I am forced to fend with country music from time to time. So I am aware of Brad Paisley's existence.
All right. Well, you know, you don't have to be an American to have to fend with country music. Because even here in Japan, all you need to do is drop by KFC, because they play country music on a loop inside. But But Brad Paisley is, you know, he's pretty young. I don't know how old he is now, maybe early 30s, but he grew up watching the original series movies.
Right.
And he was always a fan of William Shatner and Star Trek. And he brought Shatner in to some of his concerts prior to 2004, even. I don't know when the first one was, maybe 02, 03, something like that. And then when Has Been came around, Brad Paisley wrote a song about Shatner called Real, which is one of my very favorite tracks on that album. And so Brad Paisley is again on this album doing Space Cowboy, and it's another really excellent one. And he's on there with Steve Miller, who people of my age will remember. I don't know if you do.
I know.
And Steve Miller. Other odd tracks on there, like Walking on the Moon, The Police is on there. It's a very interesting album. Definitely, if you like Shatner, I definitely recommend that you pick up this album. If you're lukewarm on Shatner, but you liked Has Been because of its musicality with Ben Folds, you might be disappointed with this one. So that's my quick take. I'm actually going to write a review of it and put it on the site where I can go into a bit more of this stuff. So we'll post that when it's available. We'll tweet it out. You can find it out.
I think part of my problem is I just wasn't around for most of these songs being released. Yeah. So I'm just not gonna connect with them on the level that Shatner does. Yeah. And that probably most of his audience will. If he did a bunch of like 90s and 2000s songs, it would have that same sort of nostalgic appeal. And I would remember I would remember the original and then hear his take on it and would be good. But then I didn't know really Common People before hearing Shatner's version of it. And I still prefer his version to the original Pulp version. So perhaps I should just jump in and check out a couple of the tracks and see Shatner's take.
You should check out. I mean, some of them are kind of not great. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody is massively overly dramatic. There's a few like that. I'm not real wild about the Iron. There's a cover of Iron Man. And he has Zakk Wylde and Mike Inez on there with him. And I'm not wild about that one. The Cardigans did just a fantastic cover of Iron Man back in the late 90s, I guess it's on there. It was on their album called The Far Side of the Moon, I think.
Mid-90s.
But there's another version of it that was only released in Japan that's on an album called The Other Side of the Moon. It's all B-sides of the Cardigans. And they're doing Iron Man on there as well.
Nice.
A nice one. But anyway, that's the album. So,
yeah, it's very cool. Hey, I'm looking forward to hearing your review or reading your review. I did want to bring up something that I missed over the weekend here in Seattle was, now I'm forgetting what it was called. I believe it's A Night at the Sci-Fi Pops, something to that effect. Jonathan Frakes hosted the local symphony, doing just a bunch of sci-fi songs, everything from the original Battlestar Galactica theme to Ghostbusters to Mars. I don't know if you remember the Planets Concerto. They did Mars
many times. Yeah.
I did not go. My roommate went, and it was hosted by Jonathan Frakes. Interestingly enough, like he came out between songs and just, you know, made jokes with the crowd. My roommate said that
did he say song number one.
I should find out exactly what he did, but apparently he was like very good with the crowd. He like went up and down the aisles for a lot of the things. And then what was really great was after the show, he did a little meet and greet with some of the fans. I think you had to buy another ticket to get into that. My roommate was kind enough to get a program signed for me. So I have a slight connection to Jonathan Frakes now. I'm kicking myself for missing this.
Yeah.
Hopefully I can still meet Frakes next year at Las Vegas or something. But
I'm sure. Yeah. He's really loving doing the cons these days, I think.
Oh, yeah. So yeah.
I'm sure there'll be plenty more opportunities. Well, that sounds like fun. I wish I could have been there for that.
Frakes is just the perfect guy to do that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I performed like Mars and the Planets and all so many times.
I'm sure. Of course.
That would have been great, you know, thing to do. One of my favorite suites, in fact.
Yes. I would have liked to wonder if Frakes went down and picked up the bone and joined in. That would have been fantastic.
He'll do the jazzy version.
Not sure sure what that would have been, but that would be great. And you can play it in the holodeck.
Yeah, I think his favorite planet is Venus too, right?
Probably.
All right.
One thing Jonathan Frakes loved doing on the Enterprise was talking to the computer. I think it was Encounter at Farpoint when he was trying to find somebody. I think he was trying to find Data or Wesley. And he went up to the computer and said, you know, where is Data? And it led him right there. And I've had a similar experience, and I think you have as well, with our brand new iPhones, as we talked about earlier, and Siri, the magical iPhone assistant.
Yeah, Siri is very futuristic. I mean, the idea behind Siri, of course, is not completely new. It's, you know, it's not like Apple suddenly invented some magical new technology that never existed before. But TrekNews.net, they had a story up, Siri, Star Trek, computer-like AI for the iPhone. And and then I was watching another show that you and I both watch, MacBreak Weekly from the Twit Network, and they were also talking about how Siri, it's kind of like Star Trek arriving. And and in a way it is, because the thing with, because it's on the iPhone, even though, you know, the concept of it's not new, it's going to be mainstreamed. You know, everyone is going to have this. And I was very skeptical about it when I heard about it, but when I got the phone, I started using it. I was amazed at how well it works. And now I'm talking to my phone all the time. I'm asking my phone questions. Like, I often have to find out what time it is in Minnesota because I have clients in Minnesota. And I used to go to a website and, you know, I check the time zone converter, or I have the world clocks on here. But now I just say, Siri, what time is it in Minnesota? And she tells me, and it's like I'm talking, it's like I'm on the Enterprise now.
Yeah, I was listening to the This Is My Next podcast from some ex-Engadget editors that I love. And they asked Siri live on the podcast, can you help me hide a body? And and Siri helped them find a reservoir or a furnace or a swamp.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, she certainly did. So the thing I've been saying about Siri is she works really quite well. Not quite as good as the Star Trek computer, but
no, of course not.
But better than Marvin, the paranoid android from Hitchhiker's Guide. So somewhere in the middle, if you imagine.
Well, you know, I use Dragon Dictate on my desktop to dictate articles and things sometimes. And Dragon Dictate is like the most advanced dictation software that you can get for a desktop computer. But it still makes, maybe it's because my accent is a little bit odd. It doesn't fit into a nationality profile quite as well, maybe as an average person would. But it still makes a number of mistakes. And what I found with both Siri and the dictation that's built into this new iPhone is that it makes very few mistakes. It's so accurate. And so it does seem like it is an advance, getting us one step closer to that Star Trek type interaction with the computer. And, you know, what's interesting, I tested it with a few things. Of course, one of the first things, because I'm a Star Trek geek, one of the first things I asked Siri was, I said, Siri, beam me up. And Siri said, okay, hold still.
Oh, she told me to empty my pockets.
Oh, really?
And remove my belt or something.
Oh, that's great, because
yeah,
I tried it again later on.
She has a variety of responses. It's awesome.
Yeah. I tried it again later on. I said, Siri, beam me up. And she said, energizing.
Yes. That's so great.
It's great. I heard someone else asked, they said, Siri, I love you. And Siri said, oh, stop it. Like that.
That's fantastic. So, no, it's great. It's really great. And, you know, you think back to Scotty picking up the Apple II mouse in 1986 and trying to say computer, you know, into it. You know, now he'd feel right at home with the iPhone 4S.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we're advancing towards that Star Trek future. Yeah. And although there are some things in Star Trek, like warp engines or transporters or things that, you know, it seem unlikely that we're going to have that technology in our lives 300 years from now, voice interaction with computers, as you see it on Star Trek, I think will be here not only by then, but within our own lifetimes, before we're even old. I mean, the next 10 years or 15 years probably. We'll have that kind of interaction. So very cool stuff going on there. Okay, so moving on to the next thing here, Greg. You know, I'm always on the lookout for news about the Star Trek sequel because, you know, all this information is just flowing forward all the time, like an unstoppable river. And I was therefore very shocked when I found out this week that Zachary Quinto says they have not seen the script yet. But yet he's prepping for the movie.
I think I saw a tweet where maybe it was Damon tweeted that he was sitting across from JJ as JJ and I think it was Bob Orky were working on the script. And he just got a bunch of responses from people. Stop tweeting. Just work on the script. What are you doing?
That's right. Stop doing that. You know, that reminds me. He said, and I think it was in a TrekMovie.com discussion thread a couple of weeks ago now, and I believe it was Orky. Someone asked him, is Pike going to be in the next movie? And he essentially said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
I did. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a complete confirmation, but it was enough of it to be pretty sure that they're putting him into the script.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he didn't say like, yes, Pike is in the movie, but
he said something
yeah, that was pretty much like, yeah, he's going to be in there, which made me start wondering further, as we've discussed recently, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is the story going to be? So, okay, Pike is in there. And it takes me back to when we had Mike Rittenhouse on with us, and we were talking about the IDW comics and where they might go, and Mike's idea about redoing the Cage, but with Kirk in Pike's position. It made me think of that and how Pike might fit into that. And because of what they're doing with the comics, you know, who knows, could we be headed towards that?
Yeah, I think they're more likely just to be on Earth at some point, and Kirk can have a talk to Pike about how far he's come since the first movie and how he's, you know, grown as a captain and stuff.
You're probably right. They'll probably go back to that same bar and have a beer together.
Oh, I bet. You know, they probably will.
And they'll say like, man, I can't believe just, you know, 6 months ago you were getting decked across this table right here.
And now you're
an
admiral.
And you were saying, why are you talking to me, man?
And now you're running the Federation.
That's right.
What's with you, Jim?
Now you're
Jim
captain
Kirk.
Of the flagship. when you said, I'll do it in three, I didn't know you meant months.
Right. Oh, it's goodness.
All right. So let me ask you anyway here. The other thing that this whole story brought to mind for me was, if Quinto hasn't seen the script and he says he's prepping for the sequel, what does that entail? Are those like eyebrow exercises?
Oh, yes.
What kind of prepping do you think is going on here?
I don't know. I think, you know, if I were in his position, I'd be taking out Zoe Saldana, you know, every night.
Yeah.
Just to sort of get into character.
Yeah, yeah, they got to practice kissing, practice hugging for the transporter room scenes bridge shakes. Someone else mentioned to me on Twitter, they pictured, when the story came out, they pictured him with rubber bands around his fingers practicing the Vulcan salute.
Yes, that would be helpful. You know, maybe he's trimming his sideburns in that particular way. I noticed his hair looks really ridiculous. I don't know if it's the difference between Quinto's hair and Nimoy's hair, but the haircut does not look quite as good on Quinto. So I'd like to see them figure out a more stylish Vulcan haircut.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
A little floppy.
And it's even more noticeable in some of the publicity shots of Quinto and Pine together. It's very... Leonard Nimoy's Spock hair felt like Leonard Nimoy's hair just cut that way.
Yeah.
And Quinto's feels like it's some kind of wig. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it is or not, but it doesn't look natural to me. I know what you're saying there.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he needs to be working out to fill the pajamas that they'll be wearing in the next movie as well.
So, yeah.
There's plenty of work to be done, even if you don't know the particulars of this script.
Right. All right. Well, for that movie, they cast a new Star Trek engineer. And, of course, they cast Simon Pegg as Scotty again. And StarTrek.com ran a poll recently asking, if you were casting a new Star Trek engineer, who would it be? And here are the options. Now, you tell me. Let's do it this way. First, you have to pick from these people and then then tell me if there's someone else that you think should be there. So I picked out these names just reading through the responses from Star Trek fans. These are some of the names that were thrown out there. Sheldon from The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen, who I would hate to be in the room with when the engines weren't working and he got pissed off. Daniel Craig, Bruce Campbell, Joey Tribbiani, who I picture, I remember this episode of Friends when he was supposed to be on Days of Our Lives and they asked him, like, how do you get that look when you look at the camera, something dramatic happens and you have to look serious and kind of look away from the camera. And he said he just tries to do math in his head, right? So
nice.
There's also Jackie Chan. There's Alan Rickman.
Yeah, we talked about Marvin Marvin the paranoid android earlier.
You
definitely see Alan Rickman as a very dry engineer.
Yes. Yeah, very dry. There's also Jeff Goldblum.
Captain, I got to tell you about the warp drive, and it's just, we got to eject it. That's what we got to do.
Yeah, that's what we got to do. We're just gonna say like, Captain, there's some with the warp drive. We're like two seconds from a warp core breach.
Oh man, yeah,
6 seconds ago.
So, Geordi does his barrel roll and. And Goldblum just goes, 100% Goldblum on us.
That's right. We're going 100% Goldblum, full Goldblum. And then Leo Laporte, who tech geeks will know from the Twit Network podcast tech guy, and Nicolas Cage. So
the antimatter cannot connect with the matter like that.
You know, this is going to be the show of impersonations.
Oh, yes.
In the feature, which I recorded with Larry.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Larry does quite a few imitations as well.
Oh, so wonderful.
We are loaded in this one. Well, okay, from these people, would you choose any of these or do you have someone else?
Oh, goodness.
Would be a good engineer for the Enterprise?
I think, if you're going to have Alan Rickman on Star Trek, I'd see him more as a Phlox character. Not so much the chief engineer, although he could definitely do it. I'm sure he's probably on this list because of his role in Galaxy Quest, where he played a rather convincing alien. But seriously, who would I want? Goodness, especially from this list, I don't know.
Is there someone not on this list that you think would make the perfect engineer?
Well, I mean, my heart will always be with Roxanne Dawson and Chief Engineer B'Elanna Torres. And I would just cast her again and again to play the same character. I don't care if it's an original series show. She can play her, like, great-great-grandmother. And I don't know why she's half Klingon, but I would make it work.
It's a long story, and we don't discuss it with outsiders.
Exactly.
All right. Well, for me, this was a very easy question for me, because if I were casting a new Star Trek engineer, it would be MacGyver. No question about it, MacGyver, because no matter what happened to the ship, no matter what kind of danger you got in, you know MacGyver's going to get you out of it.
So, right.
Easy question for me.
Nice. Did you see the recent video of various photograph-enhancing scenes from different TV shows? I'm sure some of our listeners have. And it's mostly MacGyver saying ridiculous things about, focus on the Z-axis and enhance. Like, that doesn't mean anything. As much as I love Richard Dean Anderson, well, then, that means
then
nothing,
it fits,
sir.
It fits right into Star Trek then, right?
That's true.
Just tech the tech. All right. Okay, well, that wraps up our news for this time. And we're going to jump into the feature. And Greg, unfortunately, you weren't able to join Larry and me for the feature. We really missed you there. But we did record
a
great
weekend, so.
Yeah, it was one of those weeks. So we did record a great feature in which we're going to be talking about the, as we mentioned on the last show, the swinging pendulum of Star Trek fandom. And we also go into some other things like where we think Star Trek is headed on television next time and various other things. So that'll be coming up right after the break. With the reboot of Star Trek by J.J. Abrams in 2009, the original series came back into fashion. And since that time, Paramount has really been pushing TOS, albeit in an alternate timeline. And TNG kind of fell by the wayside for a while, especially after Nemesis. But now with the news that Blu-rays are coming out, TNG is coming roaring back. And with me today to talk about this a bit is Dr. Trek Larry Nemechek, who wrote an article about this on StarTrek.com recently. Hi, Larry. How are you?
Hey, Christopher. Hi. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. So, Larry, you are the preeminent Star Trek The Next Generation historian. And
that's so scary to think about, but okay.
So who better to talk about the differences in fandom between the original series and TNG and how this kind of swings back and forth as the years go by?
Well, for one thing, let me say this. The piece, it's really funny because that's like the eighth, you know, I've been blogging for 3 years, wrote magazine stuff before that. My book and the Communicator and still in the Titan Star Trek magazine, and this was the eighth guest blog. We call it Trekland Supplemental, like a captain's log, for StarTrek.com, and it's the eighth one I've done. And for some reason, this one seems to really, if not hit a nerve, at least got people talking. And the flip side of that is a lot of people, I think, misunderstand what I was saying. I wasn't saying, oh, gee, there'll be a TNG reunion movie around the corner. That's not what I was talking about. And I'm not saying that's what you thought. But I see when people shorthand it or they take the headline that StarTrek.com put on it, is TNG due for a comeback? All I was trying to say was it's a phenomenon that I saw go into action as soon as we had more than one Star Trek. As soon as there was a place for a pendulum swing. And it didn't hit me until after, you know, Star Trek used to be the original series and we want it back. And it was all about, I mean, fandom, aside from indulging your fan nerdness, which in the beginning was all the women wanting to do Spock and Vulcan and seduce Spock stories or whatever.
Which still goes on Twitter.
Stories. Yeah, which goes on still. I mean, that was, you know, all the early, this is things that people, you know, some of these stereotypes we had now, and I think Shatner's Saturday Night Live skit, the Get a Life thing, totally screwed the stereotype of fandom, because before that, it was women, and it was young women, girls, and it was middle-aged women, and the guys were in it that were the tech heads, and there were always guys in fandom, but the early fandom leaders, Bijo, Trimble, and oh my gosh, I'm going to leave people out. Anyway, the Well Committee and fanzine community and all that, and convention runners, Joni Winston, Marshak and Culbreth, and Shirley Mayuski and Helen Young with the Well Committee. And that was what fandom was all about. We want Star Trek back, damn it, as a TV show or a movie. And then when the motion picture came out, then everything turned into, okay, that wasn't quite up to par. Politically, here's what'll happen. We'll kick Gene down to not running the show. You know, let's go to the TV unit, Harb Bennett. But it all became, you know, after that, it became a series of reactions, just like every series is a reaction away from the one before. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
It's just the way life progresses. Nothing goes in a straight line in a vacuum.
Right.
Certainly Star Trek. And the point is, you went along with the movies, and then when they announced Next Generation, there was that hiccup of people that go, well, it's not Kirk, Spock, McCoy, so you can't call it Star Trek, and I'm boycotting it. And there were a lot of us like me, silent majority, who was like, shut up. Gene is running this. Will you shut up and sit down? And if you want to go gripe under a rock. Don't sabotage this for everybody else. And at the first year or two, we suffered along, and then Michael Piller came in, and it settled down. And then Best of Both Worlds was that year, and bang, they were off to the races. And all of a sudden, oh my God, Next Generation is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And, you know, it was the foam and the lather. And before you know it, within 3 years, there's two spinoff series. And Next Generation is the, you know, and the 1994 and the first movie, you know, Generations came out. And by that time, it was sad because I found myself defending the original series to all these new fans. And the mathematical fact is that the fan base that Next Generation brought in dwarfed the original series. Whether that was because a lot of those people didn't watch Next Gen and gave up on it, and Star Trek would always be Kirk, Spock, and McCoy to them. Mm-hmm. And plus, life went on, and they had to go back and raise their, and they kind of bowed out of active fandom anyway. But for whatever the reason, the numbers and the foam and the business and the bucks were all way bigger for Next Gen. That's why you had movies and spinoff shows and all that. And the merchandising and everything. And you know, you didn't have videotapes until midway through the movie run. And then the movie, the VHS into DVD add-on value came with Next Gen. So all of that was big bucks. And that was the foam. And people were putting down the original series. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, it's so cheesy. The cardboard sets, the Christmas. This is what I said in the column. And what's funny is that when, and then as you had Voyager and DS9 wind themselves down and two shows at the same time cut the audience up. Okay. And then by the time Enterprise was going to be the great white hope here of reviving the franchise, and it was disappointing for all the different reasons, and I could, we could go into that, but I won't today. You had people, that pendulum swing that started with the explosion of Next Generation kind of hit its high ebb. And then you had things like the fan films come out, mm-hmm. like Phase 2, New Voyages slash Phase 2. The Exeter was the first one, I think, really, and them and Farragut and all the rest. And Hidden Frontiers has been going forever. But about that time, and I think there was something going on culturally also, the whole thing of the retro cool 60s. And all of a sudden, people, it became the fashionable, trendy thing in fandom to suddenly... Like, they turned on Next Generation slash Voyager slash DS9. And when I say Next Gen, I merely mean the whole era. Next Gen was the bucks leader.
Yeah.
Was the income bringer. But I'm talking about the whole era.
What you I know, often call, like, the modern Star Trek franchise.
Yeah, modern Star Trek. Yeah. And I guess, you know, DS9 was a reaction away from TNG. There's no carpeted corridors on DS9. And you know, the lighting is not all pretty. It's all grilled and gritty. Mm-hmm. You know, the darker, grittier show was literally darker, grittier. And then Voyager was a different format change. But that whole reaction away from, the D is the Hyatt Regency in space. And, oh, my God, bring your family along. And, oh, they've got a therapist on the bridge. And how 80s is this? And, oh, it's so dated. And all of a sudden, the 60s, you know, Kirk would go out and, you know, forget diplomacy, Captain Picard. I'll just go, you know, bed the babe and bash the ambassador in the face.
Right.
And I don't know if it was because it was post 9/11. You know, the simplistic thing is to go, oh, let's look at what was going on in the world at the time. And it was post 9/11 or what it was. But that was the fact. The fact was that all of a sudden the retro cool 60s and everything original series was cool again, and model kits and the merchandising went that way. And even you mentioned the JJ movie. It didn't start with that. It was before that. By the time Enterprise did In a Mirror Darkly, it was already the hot thing. I think the seed was planted maybe in 96 with the Tribulations on DS9.
Yeah. Well, when
that's
did they...
not a stampede by any means, but by the time of Enterprise, and people got a little excited thinking they got disappointed, but they thinking they would have a lead in to Kirk's time and being back on, and then people being disappointed with, oh, I know you said it was NASA's look, but it doesn't really lead in.
Right.
But,
well, Trials and Tribulations was the first time where we saw the CGI remastered 1701, the original.
Right.
Which has been used now since in the remastered TOS series.
Except Tribulations was not CGI Enterprise. It was the model.
Was that a model? The Enterprise.
They built Greg Jean's bunch. They built a half scale. The original was the 11 footer. This was like 5.5. They built the Enterprise K7 in the Klingon D7.
Wow, I did not realize that. Wow, beautiful work.
I need to get
then.
My.
Yeah.
I have a at my website. I have a archived article that we did for the Communicator. Uh-huh. Which was my favorite thing to ever write, where it was a log of shooting on the sets for that episode.
Yeah. Okay.
And interviews with people. And there's some photos of some of the model work. But yeah, no, that wasn't CG actually.
Oh, interesting. Okay, we'll put a link to that in the show notes on your site. And yeah, I didn't realize that because it was so beautifully done. It was so clean and crisp. But that seeing the Enterprise like that, like you said, maybe started to spur that the TOS 60s retro cool is coming back, and then you move forward, and then we had the box DVD.
I think it was partly fatigue with the third series set in the same time frame, but also I think it was just time. But the thing, the bottom line is, it was amazing to me how within just the scope of a few years, I went from defending the original series to all of a sudden
defending TNG.
Having to defend Next Generation. It was weird.
Right.
And I'm like, is it going to be this way every 6 to 8 years?
Yeah.
You know, are we going to have some more dimensions here to this little whatever? But
so now it was the JJ movie came out in 2009. So we knew,
right.
Was it 2006 when we first found out that JJ was going to be rebooting TOS?
Right,
I
right.
think it's right.
Yeah.
And then we had kind of a build up to that, and we had the IDW comics leading up to the movie,
right.
And more TOS era books coming out. And then the movie came out. And then Paramount and pocketbooks with the novels, for example, like kind of really went hardcore TOS from,
yeah.
Say,
well, they got all their smart business ducks in a row, you know, and went that way. But I mean, I mean, seriously, by the time Enterprise was going, the fan films, because the fan films became leverage for Manny Cota to look at Rick Berman and say, come on, we got to do more of a direct lead in into the original series, because that was when New Voyages literally had more downloads after 2 or 3 weeks than viewers of an Enterprise episode.
Yeah.
And well, that was what was going waking people up. That was 2004.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I've always thought that what Manny Cota was doing with season 4 of Enterprise is what they should have done in season 1 of Enterprise. I didn't mind the beginning. I mean, Broken Bow, I think, was a very good episode. I really like Broken Bow. But after that introduction of how the crew comes together and the ship launches, should have
and
been...
And getting a feel for the era and the
format. The first couple of episodes, maybe. But then, you know, like, really get into the Tellarites and the Andorians and the Vulcans and how the Federation comes together, so that by the time we got to... If it were going to be a 7-series show, by the time we get to 4, we're into the Romulan War. And by 7, we see it. The Federation has been born. That's what I think... Yeah, the fans wanted to see. And that gives you that TOS momentum as well.
Oh, Christopher, you radical. Yeah, you and 5 billion other people thought the same thing.
I know. These are my very original thoughts that I have here. You know, I'm breaking
news. I don't mean that.
I mean
safety. I mean, what I'm saying is you're hardly a radical. That's what everybody expected.
Yeah, I know. And, that is what everyone expected. Exactly, yes.
Yeah. And with the reaction the way Manny ran the last season, that's people going, oh, yeah, can we go back? Can we do a time travel episode and go back to the 4th episode and run it this way? Because he even apologized and said, I know people are saying, does every show in the 4th season have to be a direct lead into an original series? And he's like, I only got 20 slots. I'm having to make up for lost time.
That's right.
I would have loved to have had some original standalone shows, but we only got so many before the thing is dead for a few years. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know. So that was what the point of the point was. So now my whole point was, it seems weird. I've had a little, you know, as Rick Castle would say, I've had a spidey sense, you know, as Spider-Man would say. A spidey tingle that I get little bits and pieces here that maybe not the big picture, not what's driving the bucks, but as far as what's going on in fandom, maybe that fickle pendulum is about to hit the high arc and swing. Not that, you know, Star Trek JJ's second movie is going to bomb. I mean, I'm not saying these big black and white.
Sure.
I'm just saying that somewhere the core momentum here may be swinging back to the derision of Next Gen. Maybe the funny thing is, though, that may all be a conceit. I go to conventions and we do show of, like Vegas, and we do show of hands when I have either a panel or my own thing or whatever. Anytime I have a decent sized sample, like 200 or more people, I'd say I want to see where everybody. I like to say, where did you come into fandom? Because there's nothing like your first.
Mm-hmm.
If Voyager was what you came into Star Trek with, it will always be near and dear to you.
Which
no
is what I find
is
the case with a lot of people on Twitter. I talk to so many people who Voyager was their entry point into Star Trek because of age. I mean, that was the series that was on when they were 15 or 16 years old.
Yeah. And that's your Twitter target. That's your Twitter using audience. So you're going to self-select that way. But I always ask people what brought them into fandom and then what their favorite overall was. And, you know, the conventional wisdom was that there's been this huge TOS resurgence the last 10 years. And there has been. I think a lot of it has been people came out from under their rock. You see a lot of older people coming back in that just went away from fandom. Or they had a lot. They did have a life. That's why that whole thing was so facetious. They had a life the whole time. Who do you think was buying the $1,000 chess sets? You know.
Yeah.
Licensed stuff. But whether they totally went away or didn't. But Next Generation, the silent majority has always been there for. When I see these since the last 3 or 4 years, I've been doing this because of the JJ movie and just out of curiosity. It's always been at least 50-50 among, you know, there's always been an even pool, if not still more next-gen fans than TOS. And part of that still goes back to the original math, the bare numbers, you know. So anyway, some of this is perception and the lather on top, but... So anyway, just there was just enough things. So you have some, like you mentioned, the Blu-rays coming out is getting people. I don't know if they're coming out of the woodwork again now to say, hey, yeah, I've always liked it, or what. But seeing the next gen cast kind of becoming more and more iconic, you know, they're the little animate. They've been the animated fill-ins on Family Guy for ages and Simpsons and stuff. But to now see, you know, Will being the youngest of that cast, it's easy because he's Mr. That's his persona anyway. But now here's Brent and Will on tonight. I haven't got to see the episode yet. But,
of the big,
you know, those
theory.
Kind of things.
Yeah.
And just seeing some of those things start to align. And I'm not predicting a next-gen movie or anything. But just wondering if the vibe is.
Yeah. Well, so I think the Blu-rays are definitely generating some excitement now. But prior to the, I guess through much of this year, we've kind of heard rumors of the possibility of TNG Blu-rays, but we'd only kind of really found out details over the past month or so, you know, hard, real details. So going back to the summer in Las Vegas, because you were there, besides just asking a show of hands, the general atmosphere of the convention, did you feel at that point any change from, say, the past few years, Las Vegas, or any of the big conventions, of the fandom's focus, maybe TOS versus TNG, or this classic Trek versus the modern franchise, any kind of change in that?
Well, for one thing, I think it's, let's not fall into a trap here of thinking there's this big conflict or rivalry, because there
isn't.
Sure,
that's not what I mean,
no, I didn't mean that, but I mean, we can kind of fall into that without thinking about it when we talk about something
right.
Because a lot of people will still say, as do I, you're always partial to your first. But to me, Star Trek has always been books on the shelf, books, you know, volumes in the encyclopedia, literally encyclopedia. They're all on the same shelf. I may read one more than I do other ones, but they're all there. They just all deserve equal. They all have their flaws and their pluses and minuses. And the people that go, well, I'm just a niner and I don't accept, you know, I mean, the old joke used to be the people before Next Gen, the original series people that would go, there was a whole faction of fandom that did not accept the third season, because they totally bastardized Spock's character with having him, you know, kiss the Romulans. So I only accept the first and second seasons as canon, and the third, we didn't say canon then, but I don't accept the third season. You know,
it never happened.
It never happened, no. And so that's like laughable now, but that's where people, so there's always been that, you know. But I don't think there's been this big conflict. I think a lot of the original series people just went away. And they came back, and it will always be their favorite. And to anybody that's a long-term fan, you, even if you stuck through all the rest of them, you had those 79 little episodes that were the little ship that could. I don't mean like Voyagers. I mean like the little show that could. Mm-hmm. And it survived, came back, broke the mold in Hollywood, in business, and in revival and all that. And that's all you had for 20 years was watching 80 shows over and over again. And now, oh my God, 7 years of 3 different series. And, you know, it's a different vibe to start with. So that colors people. But I don't think there was this big – I think some of that's perceptual, and people love to get it and run with it. And by the time you get to JJ's guys, I think the retro cool revolution was already well underway. Mm-hmm. And if they hadn't already decided it, I think they were going there. For one thing, they're got their own pendulum, and they're trying to make a break with the modern era, the 24th century look. And so that was kind of because the meme of coming out of Rick Berman, everybody else was, well, there's franchise fatigue, which I think is silly anyway. But I think there was producer fatigue, not franchise fatigue. But the best way, the perception, even if they didn't think that in their hearts, you had to deal with mainstream Hollywood and financing and PR machines and all that, and mainstream media. And I think the easiest way to explain and justify a Star Trek comeback after only 4 years from the grave, since they were saying it's dead in 05, is to say, well, here's why we're doing it this way. And then there's also their very human thing about thinking this was the way to reboot, quote unquote, without really rebooting.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. Just as we had with TNG, we had a case of TOS fans kind of rejecting TNG.
Mm-hmm.
We have kind of the same thing with the J.J. Abrams film as well, where you have TOS fans rejecting this as not being Star mm-hmm. Trek, which is interesting.
Some, not all, but yeah.
Yeah, not all.
Very vocal.
Yeah, sure, not all. I mean, I would say that those who firmly reject it are a minority compared to those who either really like it or accept it. But those who do dislike it are very vocal. I'm wondering if we will see a turnaround, kind of to get off the subject a little bit here, but just kind of get your thoughts
on
this.
It's your show, Christopher.
As we talk about this, what I kind of wonder is, TNG, you know, the first season of TNG is not great. I mean, the early episodes are not great.
Really?
I'm breaking news again.
Have you ever seen
again.
April 1 in Home Soil?
Well, you know, I mean, I do like to go and roll around in the flower bed every now and then because of Justice.
Yeah.
It's always stuck with me. But
yeah.
And sometimes I get out my whip and I wear fur and I jump around. thanks to The Last Outpost. But you know, TNG, it got better through the second season. And third season was really picking up. And then, as you mentioned earlier, The Best of Both Worlds was like the point where everything just came alive. And what I've been wondering about the JJ reboot is that I like the first movie as a movie, but it's kind of, as Star Trek for me, it's kind of so-so because there's just not much to the story and everyone's meeting and it's a very straightforward story. So what I'm wondering is, what are they going to do with the second movie? And if they make it meatier and they make it more to the core of Star Trek, you know, this exploration of humanity instead of just a summer action blockbuster. If they do that, do you think we might see a growing acceptance like we saw with TNG that could lead that to be more a part of Star Trek and maybe even a television in the future?
Well, that just sparked three or four things in my head. Okay. and my left elbow. No. Yeah, two or three. Number one, nothing, no matter good or bad, indifferent, what it is. We all get so carried away with, and I don't mean this anything about the movie itself. It's the nature of the beast. We get so carried away talking about this movie. It's not a season of TV episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 26 hours. You know, it's 1 2-hour movie, and this comes up with things like merchandising, and if they ever bring back Star Trek Experience, all that. It's like it's still a 2-hour movie that we barely saw, and the only thing iconic visually in it was
the lens flares.
And the lens. You can't have a model kit of lens flares.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, you know, the brewery engineering, they're going to, you know, they vowed to fix that and really build the set this time.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, the look of the Enterprise itself and the bridge set, everything else just kind of fades into, you know, other ship sets, you know, are just kind of variations on a theme there. But my point is, it's only 2 hours of film. There's not enough there, like it or hate it. There's not enough there to make an impact either way.
Right,
you're
going
to have at least another 2-hour movie. And even then, you're going to have just barely this whole look and feel and all that. The other thing is, as much as I like this, I know this movie has done great things. They're having a lot of fun with the storytelling. To me, it's like I'm looking at, I want to say, fake characters. It's characters we already knew doing stories about fake versions of them.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Entertaining. It's an alternate universe. We've had alternate universes before. You know, the Mirror Mirror universe is an alternate. The Enterprise incident, the Yesterday's Enterprise universe is an alternate universe. Heaven forbid in Parallels you had 40 million alternate universes. You know, mm-hmm. the Borg of one universe was really cute, really cool, that little minute you saw of crazed Riker.
Crazy Riker.
I mean, you know, Star Trek's full of alternate universe stories. It's not like that's a new concept. It's that now we're going to, you know, get in and wallow in this one for a while. It's not just the fact that it's other adventures of these guys. It's not like I can't accept somebody else playing Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. I want to go back and keep filling in the Prime Universe's corners.
Yeah.
I understand the whole reason this evolved this way. I'm not banging my head against a wall and, you know, tilting at windmills over it. And it's going to run a 2-3-4 movie deal. That's just the way it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hope they're all gangbuster, bang up, shoot 'em up, wonderful shows that bring everybody along for a great ride, bring tons more fans into the franchise and all that. I just look forward to the day when we are exploring new corners of the galaxy and new corners of the canon and the timeline.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah, I agree.
But I wish them all the best, and I don't mean that as a kiss-off. I mean, this has been, you know, it's been great to watch, and they'll have fun doing, there'll be a lot of fun things along for the ride. But the other thing is, they're just movies. They're mm-hmm. just movies, and they're only two, in other words, they're two-hour big-budget episodes. So your original question is, I don't know. But for people, somebody, there may be an expectation to think that a two-hour movie, good or bad, you know, fantastic, was going to wipe out people's memory of all 400 hours that have gone and 40 years that have gone before of the look and feel and coolness, whether it's original series, Prime, or Next Gen. That's not going to happen. We're human beings, and we need more than 2 hours of an impact to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much. So if we think about this and the pendulum swinging, so let's suppose that the pendulum swings back to TNG for a while. With Blu-rays coming out, like next year, we're going to have,
yeah.
As I understand it, we're going to have all seven seasons by the end of 2012 coming out. And I think that in Netflix streaming is going to be a big resurgence of TNG.
That's the other thing. The whole Netflix instant streaming phenomenon that's, you know, now you don't even have to go out and plunk down money. That was always the complaint, you know.
Yeah. Oh, Paramount and CBS are bringing a new, every 3 years is a new version. I can't afford this. Or I've given them $1 billion.
You can watch. I think it's also been good for like DS9 that always got kind of short shrift, and people are rediscovering DS9 on Netflix. But
yeah, they are.
But that whole Avenue channel is having an impact in this too. You're right.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we'll see that continued growth of TNG. And so then let's just kind of think ahead a little bit, because I want to go somewhere else with the whole JJ and TOS thing here. If the pendulum then swings back to TOS again, you know, as you're predicting, like every 6 to 8 years we have the swing. I kind of think now we have an alternate timeline here. So the pendulum could swing back to TOS, but it could kind of go in two directions. And tell me what you think here. So,
well, see, I was going to say, let's not be accused of two-dimensional thinking here.
That's like right.
Some
we are
eugenic
not.
Eugenic Superman, we know. Yeah.
Or because, Janeway.
That's right. That's right. Because, you know, I'm just talking about what I think has been a good handle on the last few years. But as you know, time will go on. Old fans will get older. New fans who come in through JJ have a take on things. I mean, people are sitting around arguing now about if there is a series, will it be JJ-verse or will it be Prime? Or
well, that's my question.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't – I hope for the – I mean
– Well, that's my question.
Just my personal selfish feeling is I hope they go back to Prime and do it. But the reality is if it's series, there will be a production company. There'll be a production designer, graphics people. You know, they're not going to have Herman, and they're not going to have all the people. For one thing, producers are producers, and networks have egos, and there's practicality, there's lifespans, there's career spans, there's ego, there's all kinds of things going into it. They're not going to have the reassembled team from, you know, the Berman era come in, and as much as they were, you know, the Akutas on down or whatever, unfortunately, you know, there'll be new people doing this. There will be a political vibe in the air by then of either we're going to go off and do our own thing visually, or we're all fans and we're going to latch on to what we have. You know, it'll depend on what the setting is. Is it an alternate universe from anything we've seen before? Is it a whole new era in Prime? And as to what that'll be its own product of the politics of the time, the emotional, the social of the time, what fans are demanding, although it could be just as easily ignored as listened to.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I know what I wish would happen, but I don't know what'll happen. But that's why I'm saying it'll be more of a focal pendulum by then.
Yeah, right.
It'll be going in, in a triangle or an octagon. Who so, you know by then.
My thoughts on it and what I was
have I totally obliterated anything you tried to get to?
No. So if it swings back, what I'm thinking is it could go in one direction, which could be TOS era again, but it's Abrams verse. Although I cannot imagine them being able to get Zachary Quinto and Chris Pine and Zoe Saldana and these guys to do a TV show, you know. On a
weekly
basis.
That'll never happen.
So that's not going to happen. So if it goes back that way, it would be a new show, but it would be
this is a three or at most four movie franchise with that particular thing.
Right, you know? Right. So would we? would we have or would you want to see a TV show that's set in the Abramsverse, TOS time period, but it's like a new ship, a new crew, or as an alternative, we fill in, like you said, fill in some gaps. For example, we have a series about the Enterprise B, or we have a series about the Enterprise C, or we have a series that takes place, as someone mentioned to me on Twitter recently, a Beta Quadrant series, which kind of explores off into the Beta Quadrant beyond the Klingon and the Romulan Empire to the areas that we've never really explored before. But it's all in the TOS time period.
Yeah.
Or like,
well, no, that would be interesting.
Or like Vanguard, for example. If you know
well,
the Vanguard
there's
book
series.
Well,
there's two or three levels to that. One of them is JJ or not, because there's you know the hardcore things then would be you've got no Vulcan, you know some of the things that would color that. Even if you're in the Prime universe, though, it'll. This is what I was trying to get to with people as the movie came down in 09. We talk about canon and continuity. There's script and concept and story continuity, but there's also visual. And people get all into what does the script have. That's the big chunk, and that sets the trend and the tone. Mm-hmm. But the takeaway, people, you know, your sense memory, your visual thing, people, it may be you may have two writers or three writers or five writers who are total slaves to canon. But depending on who you visually in your production design and your visual effects, who you've unleashed to give the visuals to the story might go off and do all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And which almost obliterate the fact that you had this, you know, I'm being totally hypothetical here, but you had a slavishly adhering script to canon, which we didn't have. They went off on a few funky things, even apart from the alternate universe thing and Spock who are together and Vulcan exploding and Manda dying and all those kinds of alternate universe-y things. But you had script continuity, but you also have visual continuity. And I think people forget that there's two kinds of that when you come down to the reality of it. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily – you had that happen on the TV series. You'd have visual effects. You know, all the years on the shows, they tried to have a plain D7 Klingon battlecruiser, and something always got in the way of it happening. The writers were trying to throw a bone to the fans because as it went on, they had fan writers. And they could never quite get a D7 back on screen, mm-hmm. except for Tribulations when they built the model again. But so in the future, back to your point, mm-hmm. whether it's Prime or it's the JJ-verse or not, even if you're in the Prime universe and you have people that are going back and they're fan writers, who you hire and what the marching orders are from whoever the top producer or studio or whatever, and whether they how beholden they feel to – because – the movies didn't do that with the original series. We had to adapt the idea that this technology looked changed in 6 years. I mean, you know, fans are always futzing canon for those things, even when people set off with good intentions. So we'll always be doing that. And it's human beings, and we're not robots, and we don't download info, you know, design aesthetics from Herman Zimmerman and stick them in whoever's coming along the next generation.
Right. I think whatever crew, production crew came on, it's going to have a different look. Yeah. Whereas fans, like if they did an Enterprise...
And there'll be technology and new material. You know, it's like everything else. There'll be new ways of doing things just in the TV industry that'll alter things.
Because I think about like if they did an Enterprise B series, and when I mention all these other like non-Abramsverse series, I'm talking about in the Prime timeline here. If they did an Enterprise B series, though, I think that all fans, and there are a group of fans who want, if you remember, you remember going back to 1999, 2000, when they were talking about the next series, and there were a lot of fans who were kind of trying to push for it.
One of the Sulu
Excelsior series.
Yeah.
I think fans are going to expect, if a series like that came about, fans are going to expect that it's going to look like the scenes from The Undiscovered Country. It's going to be the, well, I shouldn't say that because that's actually the Excelsior, but because the Enterprise B is an Excelsior ship, the beginning of Generations, where you actually have the Enterprise B. Fans are going to expect it to look like that, and the whole aesthetic of the show for them is going to need to be like that. And if it's different, which it almost likely would be, that might kind of pull them out of the magic, might be gone, for example.
Yeah. Well, it's all, like I said, it's all going to flow from the top. Whoever the producer, whatever they feel their charge is, because when you had, you know, when you had both the next-gen crew under Richard James redo the bridge for Relics, And then Herman's Bunch did it for DS9 Tribulations, and then did the Defiant, quote unquote, for In a Mirror Darkly. They were all full of old fans who were now professionals, like Mike and Denise and Rick Sternbach and John Eaves and Doug Drexler and all those guys, who were slavishly trying to, because they were trying to give the fans exactly what they wanted, and you know that's a Valentine, or slightly different field. Mike Westmore makeup was not an original series fan, but he was a smart enough guy and knew what he was working in to know that that's what he needed to go do. And so even when he would get called in by contract to go work on a video game, they would go, and they were doing original series. Oh, there's some stories there, but anyway, if he got called in to do a Gorn or a Tellarite when they weren't being shown on episodic TV, he would go back and know enough to go. His thing would be to go redo his research, like any design professional would do, whether he's researching, it's a production designer researching medieval architecture, or he's, you know, researching or original Star Trek. So hopefully you would think that whatever production team would be doing that, unless somebody had some kind of a snarky thing in them that, hey, this is our show and we're going to do it this way, and you're just going to have to accept the fact that it's been 20 years since they did those episodes and we're going to do it differently. The idea is to, of course, you bridge, you make it look right, but you do it. You do what they did with In a Mirror Darkly. You have the bridge, but they showed, look, it's not static. It's not plywood and Christmas lights. And they introduce motion and little things. And what they did with Tribulations, where they built those models of the Enterprise and K7 and D7, but the conceit was, especially with the station, when it's way out here, it looks just like it did in the 60s. The conceit is that if you push in closer, then you see all kinds of detail. And you don't say, but that wasn't on the 60s model. You say, if they'd had the time and money and budget, this is what they would have done.
Exactly. Yeah.
If they could have. If you could have gotten a camera this close to the K7 model in 1968, this is what it would have looked like. And when you have tender, loving care fan designers doing it that you trust to do that, and like Mike and Rick and Dave Rossi did with the remastered when they came up with new things.
Yeah, so
you trust them to get into the aesthetic. So hopefully you have that. Because if it's not, and if you have that careless, hey, you'll take what we give you attitude, the whole project is probably going to be doomed to fail anyway, because that will probably permeate the writing and everything else.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my concern.
I mean, we're really talking out of our hat here, but that's... You know,
I know, we're just all over the place. But
I mean, that's, we're talking about human nature here and the nature of the business as much as Star Trek.
Well, and that's why I feel like that's more likely to happen than not. I mean, if they were to bring back the same crew, you know...
I mean, if the network and or studio were stupid... they would allow that to happen. If they were smart, they would not let that happen. Who wants to fund a bomb?
Yeah.
And who wants to, you know, and anybody, I think hearing the writers on the movie talk and other people who have tried to pitch series, it's almost this thing of, you know, how cool would it be to be the one that brings it back to TV? But, oh my God, do you want to be the first one to totally blow it?
Yeah.
It's like this, the time bomb game, you know, or what's one of those games where you don't want, you know, or musical, you don't want to be the one guy who gets handed, you don't want to be the Stuart Baird who is called in to do something and messes up the unmessable thing.
Yeah, I was thinking of Operation, and you don't want to be the guy that has to remove the wishbone.
Yeah.
all right, well, let's swing back the other way, because the other thing I want to get your thoughts on is if we come back to the TNG era, so our pendulum is spinning back to the TNG modern franchise era. It seems to me, just in asking people around, talking to people, that there are more people that want to see a continuation of the 24th century storylines than there are who want to go back in time, although there are both groups.
When you say back in time, do you mean go back to original series per se, or do you mean just fill in gaps that we haven't seen explored with a series?
I think
in the timeline,
yeah,
like you were saying, the B era, the C era, the post Romulan War era.
I think that, so pre 24th century, so in between, the periods from the end of the third year of the first 5-year mission on to when the Enterprise D is launched. So all that gap in there is kind of what I mean by going back in time into that like 80-year gap. Versus continuing.
What was the Tomed incident?
Right.
There you go, Romulan fans.
Do you think there is more, the fan base as a whole, because there are plenty of people like us who love all Star Trek, regardless of the time period. The fan base is.
I never accepted the third season of the original series.
Yeah, I know.
No, I'm kidding.
I want you to quit tweeting me about that all the time. All those direct messages. It's like five.
That's not Spock.
Five times
they
a day.
Bastardized Spock.
Yeah, five times a day, I get a message from DM from Larry that says the third season never existed.
He would never say that to Droxine. He would never say that to Droxine.
Yeah, anyway. It's like, yeah, Droxine. Yeah, you know, it doesn't always have to be 7 years apart, you know?
Yeah. He would never talk about Vulcan sex like that with a stranger.
Anyway. All right. So, but the fan base as a whole, if people were to get behind something, do you think swinging back to the 24th century era is what might drive Star Trek in the future, as eventually we're going to get back to television, I think. So
yeah.
What drives that in the future?
Well, I think there's variables, like I said a while ago, I think there's variables that we don't know at this moment what will be going on. I think a break is a good thing because people don't stop to think about, forget canon and background in Star Trek. Just think about TV in the 60s and TV in the 80s. And when Next Generation started, aside from the fact they came up with this wonderful canon idea of having it be 80 years in the future and you got away from all the problems of, you know, do we recast the original characters? But no, we'll honor them and go 80 years in the future. But and then the design problem is, well, how do we show the future even further into the future? Well, part of that was solved by where TV production technology and our social, you know, I mean, cell phones weren't big in 87. They were getting, well, Mulder and Scully had the bricks. But, you know, the whole thing about, well, look at this. We've all got cell phones just like the original series, and we've caught up with the 60s, 23rd century. You know, that whole little dance that was done, a lot of things were solved just because that's where the world was that's putting on the show.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And part of the thing of, aside from the fact that, like, the last year of Enterprise was all done digitally and there weren't daily tapes, the Rush's tapes. I mean, they just, you know, the whole thing of we're not sending the dailies out on videotapes to sit in people's offices all day long. Now it's just, you know, emailed. Now we go, well, duh. But in 2004-05, that was brand new. And we're watching real time. You go on set and they'd had the digital cameras and two monitors, which is, again, this is old hat now. But that was like a radically different thing then. It was the first, and they only got to do it for 1 year because the series went down. But my point is, TV technology, materials technology for set building, visual effects, all of that. And then that's the analog, organic stuff. Then you've got what's going on in society, what's our politics, what's all that affecting the writing and all that. The 80s were way different than the 60s as far as what's coloring the writers and where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. You got Gene's basic thing here of tolerance, understanding, peaceful Earth, finding, you know, and finding the new thing, Idik, and exploring boldly and all that. And how do you take that and put it, and what's the fabric, what's the filter we're living in today? If you have a 10-year break at least, or 15 or 20 years, that'll all take care of itself. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that part of it, then it'll be, well, what's our attitudes? What are we, you know, I mean, every decade's had a different vibe to it. You look at the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, or, you know, the aughts were the post 9/11 and we all got darker and what was coloring our attitudes. And now we're, speaking of pendulum swings, we're a pendulum swing. It's been 10 years since 9/11 and now we've got different things, you know, the world economics is a background and mm-hmm. social things beyond that. So my point is, I don't know, but as far as the fan thing goes, one clue is when Enterprise came out and you had the whole big fan backlash about, which I always thought was silly myself, because I was one of those that said, let's fill out the, I want to see a founding of the Federation, because I thought it would be good storytelling.
Yeah.
Because the writers felt boxed in by the perfect humans thing, and everything had to be external, and it had to be alien conflict and all that. And I was always, the first time I got out here and realized that was what was going on when I was working on my Next Generation book, I'm like, well, do one at the founding where you didn't have technology to save your ass. You didn't have the every week. You didn't have the prime directive every week. You didn't have everything. You weren't smart. You had to learn those things. You could still be noble and be noble humans, but you'd make more mistakes and have flaws. And we see you learn and we see you invent. And that was, so I thought it was a great idea when I first, but then you had the fans that said, but that's going in the past. Star Trek is about the future. And I'm sorry, I'm making fun of them, but they deserve to be made fun of. No, I'm kidding. You know, Star Trek's about the future. We need to go on beyond Sisko and Janeway and Picard. And my response to that is, It's all in the future.
That's right. So,
Archer's time is in our future, too.
I saw that what was Brandon Braga was talking about the temporal Cold War and the studio wanting that added, and they wanted it to be to give it the show a futuristic element. And he said that, well, you know, something that's set in the 22nd century, it seems pretty futuristic to me. But
yeah, they were making their big noise about it being the bridge from NASA. But yeah. See, there you go. And they kind of got it added on and never really had a plan for it. But so my thing, I'm a Star Trek fan, and I would like to see any of these unexplored niches done. I know there's tons of fans that want to go on. The animated pitch that Dave Rossi and the guys did that was going to be on StarTrek.com until mm-hmm. StarTrek.com went away, which they've now shared with the world, that was going to kind of reflect the 9/11 darkness and retrenching, right. But coming out of that as a hopeful look and using that as only like 150 years in the future in post Picard, Janeway, Sisko time.
Right.
That would have been that was a fascinating way to go. And it was after. So, you know, in a way, but it set up enough stuff that you had a lot of new things that would pull people in. Personally, I also think that the bottom line is you're going to have people gripe, just like you griped about Killing Spock. You griped about
remastered effects on TOS.
TOS. Until it got there. Yeah. You had people gripe about Next Generation not being, you know, Star Trek. You had people gripe about, you know, DS9's on a space station, doesn't go anywhere. You know, all the gripers, and some of that people do go away. But basically, I go back to a Field of Dreams. If you build it well, they will come.
Yeah.
As a bottom line.
Yeah.
And if you make a great Star Trek show that has the Roddenberry vision in it, and it does not ignore canon, and I say that not as an analyst, but as somebody I'm tired of people talking about characters and plots and the Roddenberry vision and the projection from Earth, and not talk about the fact that from day one, Gene talked about the believability factor and continuity and remaking of Star Trek. They were generating. We need to talk about the same sister ships over and over. We need to keep track of what we're doing. And the fact that canon and continuity was – and they screwed up, and people are human. But that was a concern, because a third of Star Trek's appeal is the fact that it took itself seriously enough and took the audience seriously not to invent things or assume that you were going to forget something after 6 weeks and they could just dream up something else new.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So these people that go, I'm so tired of the anal canonistas bringing up the fact that hem is a half inch too wide on Next Generation when it was not, you know, those kinds of things. I go, but that's, if that had not been an appeal of the show, we wouldn't be sitting here talking.
Sure. Yeah, because it would be forgettable otherwise. Yeah,
that would be that's a major chunk of the appeal of the show to a major chunk of the audience.
Well, because
if not, we'd just be, you know.
Yeah, it pulls you into that world. I mean, the one thing about that future is that you can feel like you're there, and things you have to have that continuity, because in real life, I mean, you have continuity, obviously.
And I'm gonna pull old rank here.
Yeah,
the first wave of Star Trek fandom was about people mad about the cancellation.
Yeah.
What was the first reaction? The fanzine stories were first. Conventions came next. The next wave was the tech manual, the blueprint, the film clip slides, people making costumes mm-hmm. at conventions, the recreation of it all because people loved the universe because on their poor little budget that made Matt Jeffries cry more and more every year when they would cut him. And, you know, Bill Tyson, those people that made, you know, magic out of junk and pennies, they still created this world that you could want to climb through your TV mm-hmm. and join. And you knew that if it was not specifically shown in an episode, you knew what the bowling alley on the Enterprise looked like, even without it never having been seen.
Right.
You knew what some things would be like. Or you might sit and argue about it, but that was the fun too.
Yeah.
But my point is, yes. And I see that's what the JJ movie hasn't got there yet, and whether they did a good or a bad job with the last movie is moot point.
They can't get there in 2 hours, like you said earlier.
Yes, yeah. Yes, you're going to need 3 or 4 movies. And if this whole JJ universe thing is only 4 movies in the big scope of things,
yeah,
and we go on to whatever the next series is, it'll always be in that niche.
Yeah.
It'll be like the fact that, oh, well, we finally saw an Andorian bridge, you know, or, oh, we saw outdoor scenes on Cardassia.
It'll be like
the big billboards.
It'll be like the Ewok cartoons to the Star Wars franchise, right? So you don't even.
Yeah. Well, I was just wincing about the Ewoks, but
yeah.
But my point is, the bottom line, not good, not bad. It's just the, like Obama said, it's just the math. The math is 8 hours.
Yeah. And you're talking about feeling that that universe is real and people feeling that they can live in that universe with,
yes,
with the new iPhone, with Siri. I've seen people tweet, you know, I've seen articles about how Siri takes us one step closer to that Star Trek future, mm-hmm, where you could talk the ship. And what do people say about it? People say, I wish the voice was Majel's voice. You know, I mean, it's because that technology is so real to us and as fans, because like you said, you pay attention to those details of continuity and just the fine details, that it is so real that even when something like this comes out, you want to have that voice.
And it was a big thing when the generations of writers finally started coming up through Next Generation and went off to Voyager Disney. The writers they weren't fighting fans or fan pitchmen on stories. They were fans, and mm-hmm, it became easier and easier to do that.
Yeah, right.
It's the same thing. The people who are inventing are, you know, Jobs was just the first wave. But the guys who are designing technology now, it's a cliche, but they're affected by Star Trek.
Absolutely.
And I will say Star Trek, not Star Wars, although there's iconic images of Star Wars in our heads. The Millennium Falcon. The day-to-day, I mean, here's another case of simple math. There's 1, 2, 3, there's 12 hours of main Star Wars on film. There's, mm-hmm, Clone Wars animation. There's the Ewok Christmas special or whatever. But my point is,
soon
there's
to be remastered
730
on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Yes. Oh God, yeah. Although, you know, if they're not buried under a pit somewhere for most people, they try to. But my point is, there's 730, I called it the 700 Club at a con last year, and I liked that. There's 739 hours of Star Trek through different iterations, but there is there's an evolution and a continuity to it. And that's going to make, that's bit by bit, that's a drip, drip, drip thing on the people who are the kids now, or kids 10 years ago, who are now designing everything, whether they're conscious of it or not. You know, they may not have intended to do an homage to a Star Trek replicator interface, but that's what's
in their head. It seems to them natural, like this is how it should be, when actually it's planted in their head.
Whether they're consciously thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Not.
All these years of
Whether
Star
they
Trek.
Ever sat up at some convention party at 1 a.m. half drunk with five other guys and gals, and heaven forbid these days, gals. We've had the girl geek revolution. But so that's what I mean about, we sit here and pontificate about there's unintended effects happening, hopefully positive, that we can't even, I don't want to say we can't predict, we can kind of look back and see what's happened. But this has all got multiplying effects going on that we don't even, you know, the old thing about, oh, the writers messed up. Well, after a while, the designers and the writers were all old fans or originals, you know, came up through fandom. And they just happened to be the ones who worked in TV.
Right. And even if they weren't diehard fans, they were still influenced by it because it permeated culture so much.
Right, right, right. And then now we're talking about the culture and the IT world and popular technology.
Yeah.
And,
so
and
I guess
that.
To bring us to kind of a close on this here is, again, with whichever way the Star Trek pendulum swings, whether it be to TOS or to TNG, it's ultimately all part of the same long continuity and the future that we all want or feel like we can live in. At any rate.
Yeah. Those first two swings, like I said, I remember people getting snarky on both sides with the other side of a 6-8 year gap there. We had the TOS snark and then we had the anti-TNG snark. And I was always defending whoever was the one being beaten down. Like, guys, it's all come on. Yes, they had carpeted walls and families and a therapist on the bridge. That was the intention. That wasn't just a goofy thing. Oh, we were drunk one night and didn't realize that slipped in. That was Gene's. That was part of my point of that article too.
Yeah.
That was the intention. They said families should not choose between career. I mean, people should not choose between career and family. You can bring your family along and not do it recklessly.
Right.
And You know, and yes, look at our returning servicemen from Iraq and Afghanistan, what the suicide rate is and the PTSD. Of course it makes sense to have, don't just have your chief medical officer crack wise about being a surgeon, not a psychiatrist. I mean, you need to have a mental health staff with your people. And, you know, so like make fun of that, sure, but you're just showing your, you know, those were things that were intentional choices, you know, and ahead of their time.
For sure. All right. Well, it's going to be interesting to see where these things head, because I guess for the next, I don't know, like you said, 3-4 movies anyway. So we're talking, what, like eight or 10 years maybe we're going to have Star Trek on the big screen. But eventually we'll get back to TV. And of course, it will continue to expand and live on through the novels and the comics and the fan shows as well.
And people argue about what the future will be and who will know. But I still say I think if somebody, hopefully, like with the movie franchise, you'll have people who care and really are going out in different, you know, in different fashion to try to, they're not being reckless. I think that would be silly for the studio or network in control to intentionally sabotage something. Sadly, it's happened before. You know, there was the abortive Doctor Who thing in the 80s by people that didn't get it. The one off, but it lived to fight another day.
But it'll come
back.
Anyway,
you do this every week, don't you, Christopher? You talk about these are just like flimsy little topics you do every week.
I sure do. And people ask, it's amazing that you can spend so much time talking about Star Trek, but
we're pontificating a little more here. So that's kind of what I find myself doing a little more of these days, is because lots of people can just jump out and do the news reporting and all that. And I still love interviewing people. I've got an interview with Ron Moore on video that I need to get put up on my site. But it seems like with the years I have in the franchise, this seems to be one of the things I can. I just noticed that as we led into the movie, into JJ's movie, people had such a misconception about the way Hollywood movies and Hollywood TV worked, and the interface between Star Trek world and production world. You know, I just saw people didn't, there were some elements that people didn't get. And I knew the minute they cast the cast that they did, that this was a movie, not a TV show. And I knew how it would filter out to the way they came to conventions and, you know, all these little things that fans see as fans. And I just remember it was the first couple of times I did this at conventions. It was, people were like, oh, I could just see people going, wow, we don't really get into this before, but this has been kind of interesting. So I realized that was a good thing to, a good public service to talk about with people and raise those questions. And not that I have all the answers, but to at least steer the conversation that way and go, yeah, but just remember, or we haven't been here before. You can't look over here and, you know, those kinds of things. So that's been fun at conventions. And I'll be in my first time in Florida, in Orlando, at the end of the month at the Orlando Vulcan events, the 28th, 29th, and 30th. There's a cheesy Hollywood shout out for you, but I just realized this will be up before then, hopefully. So
yeah, this will be up on Monday. All right. Well, it is great fun to pontificate about this, and I hope you'll come back and pontificate with us more in the future.
Oh, Christopher, you know I always will. But of course, in the meantime, people can find me at LarryNemechek.com and TreklandBlog.com. And
they can also spot you, if they look carefully, they can spot you in the future. In the 23rd century, and where would that be?
Oh, and the long lost vignette from Phase Two, from New Voyages Phase Two.
That's right.
At the Phase Two site, actually, if you go to Trekland, I've got a blog entry about the story of how John Kerrigan saved the show and brought it back and persevered and made it. It's a little 9-minute vignette episode from 05. 6 years ago was shot. And how my little, and the other half of the story is my little fanboy moment of finally getting to be a Tellarite, a very cool Tellarite, I may add. Totally professional makeup and I don't know, you know, I always was mad that the Tellarites never got their fair shake out of Journey to Babel. It's like the Andorians were everywhere, even though they had to wait 20 years. They at least had a comeback on Enterprise. And the Tellarites kind of got shuffled to the end and kind of missed whatever. But
Yeah,
very proud of that.
You look like a pretty relaxed Tellarite in that vignette, I must say.
Well, I mean, you're fat and sassy and argumentative. You're fat and sassy. And
just hanging out there by the fire. And
Well, A, he's drinking, and B, he's got Klingons around him. He's not an idiot, so, you know, he's having to hold his tongue. But
Good point. Good point.
He got his licks in.
So we'll put some links to that in the show notes as well, and over to your site. And, is there anything else you want to direct people to?
Well, we're in a bit of a lull, but we are still very much working full blast on The Con of Wrath, my documentary. Mm-hmm. And you can still go to conofwrath.com, which is a branch off my main site. But and not to, you know, get out there and be proud. If you want to do the Kickstarter-like thing, we're using PayPal. Contributions from $10 up to $2,500, or you know, we have a thank you gift level with everything. So for screen credit and for a thank you package. But we had to have a couple of weeks off from my cameraman's schedule, but we're going to head back in. And Wendy Doohan is going to speak for Jimmy. And get back more of the Con of Wrath, for those that don't know, is this, the first rock star convention that was ever planned, was a huge thing. The Wrath of Con cast was all there except for Leonard Nimoy, who actually tried to come at the last minute. And then it turned into the first big fandom debacle ever in history. And it's just an amazing story. And it actually is an uplifting story. And you can go to the site and read about it. But looking forward to getting back active with it, and we're editing and looking at tape now, so that's still on the books. That hasn't, just because the headlines have not come thick and fast lately doesn't mean we're not still working on it.
Yeah, it is a very interesting story. I'm really looking forward to seeing your finished piece on that. Do you have any idea, like a timeline for?
Well, I'll be honest. It's not our. You know, we're not documentarians full time, mm-hmm. so it's kind of our weekend shade tree project to work on, but we're hoping within 2 years to have it together. I'd love next year's the anniversary year, but I don't think we'll make that, but hopefully within a couple years.
Well, it is a cool story, and if you haven't read up on this a little bit, do hop over to Larry's site and the Con of Wrath. It's conofwrath.com, is that right? Mm-hmm. Larry, hop over there, and
conofwrath.com will get you there.
And read a bit more about that. Very interesting.
Okay. Oh, and along with the donation opportunity, if you were a survivor of the Con of Wrath, which was actually called Ultimate Fantasy, if you're a survivor, we want to hear from you, and we're getting our ducks in a row to either get to you or have you send us your story and your memories, and we may use it. So
you are going to have "I Survived the Con of Wrath" T-shirts, right?
We have three variations planned. So in my head, I have it, but we've got a good logo going already. But I want to thank. We will have the T-shirts, and then I'm going to thank the people who send us their memories of the weekend, and then the guys who were actually on camera for it. So, we have a new trailer up at the page too with Walter and Harv Bennett.
Oh, okay. So, I'll have to go watch that. I don't think I've seen the latest one. So,
I've got it up in Flash, and I'm going to go back to the YouTube version. I like that better. But we debuted the trailer at the big cons at Comic Con this year, San Diego, and at Vegas, and. It's the short version of the big trailer is on the page now. So,
all right. Yeah, go back to the YouTube version, because, you know, if the Enterprise view screen ran on Flash, there would have been a lot of broken down negotiations in the Federation.
I know. I went down. I mean, I knew that, and I was going by another conceit, but then I realized I didn't have to compromise it, so I'm going back to the...
Yeah.
Yeah, we want all of the Jobs of files to be able to...
Absolutely.
See it too. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for joining me today, Larry. It was just great talking to you.
Christopher, I hope we didn't put anybody, you know, under the table here. I hope it was fun for everybody, but and maybe opened up some things people hadn't, you know, thought about. So that's always fun too.
Well, Greg, it's too bad you couldn't be there for the discussion that Larry and I had, but I hope that you enjoy listening back to it, and I'm really looking forward to having Larry on the show again soon and having you there with us too.
Yeah, it was great talking to Larry as I tried to get him on the show, and it was too bad I couldn't be there. I'm sure we'll have him on again, though, and then we'll have a nice big group discussion. That'll be great.
Most definitely.
I did want to mention, I talked about last week that I had details of the upcoming Pacific Northwest Star Trek meetup/tweetup. So it is going to be Sunday, October the 30th.
Sunday.
Exactly.
Sorry, I couldn't resist doing that.
Thank you. It's
going to
be
Alabama.
Very good. Sunday. It's going to be at noon at the Sure Shot Cafe in the U District in Seattle. I can give you directions or point you ways to get there. I picked that day and that time because there's also a board game meetup at Sure Shot. So This meetup will probably bleed into the board game meetup if people want to stick around and play the Star Trek trading card or the deck building game I was talking about earlier. So certainly, guys, if you're in Seattle, send me an RSVP either to Trek FM or to Greg Harbin on Twitter, as we'll talk about in a second. And yeah, just swing by. It's going to be a good casual time for talking some Star Trek and getting to know some of those people I only know by their Twitter names and their Twitter pictures.
Yeah, sounds like fun. And again, I'm still working on that transporter so I can get over there. I have Chief Engineer MacGyver working on it right now.
Hope to see you there.
One of these days I'll get over there. Okay, that sounds like fun. So, all right. Well, if anybody has any thoughts on any of the stuff we talked about today, just drop us a line. Go to trek.fm/contact. You can send us a regular old message that way. You can leave us a voicemail if you call 646-652-TREK. Or you can talk to us over on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. And you can catch Greg on Twitter as well, as he just said.
Yep, Greg Harbin. That's GREGHARB as in boy, IN.
Yep, and I'm there as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And you can also find us over on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And we can talk with more than 140 characters. And one other thing, because we didn't discuss it earlier, we just want to remind you to check out the games on Trek FM. If you just go to the site, look under games, we have trivia, we have crosswords, and we have word searches now. And also, if you want to play more Trek Trivia live on Twitter, you can follow username Trek Trivia, where Mark Stampler and Anthony Davis are doing live quizzes several times a week. Well, Greg, I've got to, again, get over, and I think my Heisenberg compensator is going out over there, and I'm never going to get to your meetup if I don't get that worked out, so I'm gonna take off here.
Yeah, Chris, it looks like it's time to stick a damage modifier in it, because the ready room is done.